It's the Popmatic Podcast for June 15th, 2016.
Is that Puppet Mouth of World?
All right. Coming to you from Studio MPL in the wooden heart of downtown Nashville, this is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out as long as you're a real boy or a girl and a resident of Davidson County. I am Jeremy, and pulling my strings today are...
Oh, dear Mike.
Clem Marie.
Bill.
Amanda.
Puppet shows began at Nashville Public Library way back in the 1940s, and today Wishing Chair Productions continues this tradition, putting on shows both in our wonderful children's theater and at branches all over the city. June 17th marks the beginning of the International Puppet Festival, in which puppet troops from all over the world descend on Nashville Public Library to twist the minds and smash the dreams of kids of all ages. On today's show, we're going to talk about all things puppets, and it's guaranteed to probably get creepy.
Yay!
Amanda.
Yes, Jeremy?
What do you think about puppets?
Well, okay, so before I met my husband, if someone told me that I was going to have to sit through a ventriloquist act, I would either have fallen asleep... or I would have planned some excellent heckling.
Wait, did you marry a ventriloquist?
No, I did not. Okay. But
is your husband a puppet?
Does he have a disembodied head and voice?
He does not.
His name's Slappy.
But thanks for asking. Don't creep me out. It's too early in the morning. So in my head, ventriloquist, or Vince, as they like to call themselves, are majorly dated. I mean, let's party like it's 1924, y'all. But through my husband, I learned about the one, no really, just the one guy who somehow has made ventriloquism something cool. My husband has been a fan of Jeff Dunham for a long time, and we actually went to see the comic when he came to the Bridgestone Arena a few years ago. Now, for those of you who don't know, Dunham is a stand-up comedian who uses a family of dummies as his delivery medium. So if you want to learn more about Jeff Dunham and how in the world he decided to become a vent, I suggest reading his autobiography, All By Myself. So in his biography, Dunham describes what it was like starting out as an 8-year-old kid in Texas. I'm sure he never got beaten up for that. So there's this magic number going around that people who master their craft need to put in 10,000 hours to really be successful. And Dunham is definitely one of those people. I really respected his work ethic. He worked on his craft all the time, like literally all the time. And luckily he had his parents to support him through it all. Which is unusual in the world of ventriloquism, I would imagine. When are you going to get a real job? So the one thing I didn't know about Dunham is that he loves to build helicopters. He actually handcrafted all of his figures or his dummies personally. Right now he has 7 main characters, including a tucking jalapeno on a stick.
And I was a child, because he's been around a long time.
Oh yeah.
I saw him on a television show, mm-hmm. and I was like going around my house saying jalapeno on a stick, and my stepdad was like, don't you say that, and I was like, what, and he thought I was saying the D word.
Oh.
And I was like, I'm saying on a stick.
No,
he's
stick.
He's like, oh, all right, go to your room.
Like a kebab. Yeah, like a stick.
That's too hot to handle.
That came later.
So by the end of the book, he was actually on his 4th helicopter kit, which takes some doing. So Dunham works very hard at pushing the envelope, but he's also very concerned about seriously offending people. His goal is for his characters to be edgy and funny, not bigoted and mean. My husband loves Walter, the grumpy old man, but I think Walter reminds me a little bit too much of my own grandfather. So my favorite character is Ahmed, who is a dead terrorist, and the whole concept of Ahmed is hilarious. He's a suicide bomber whose bomb went off too soon, so now he's stuck here as a skeleton instead of getting his 72 virgins in heaven. And even though he goes around, he threatens to kill us. There's still something likable about the guy. There is. He's an anti-hero.
That's great.
So the library has a lot of Dunham's material on Hoopla if you have never seen him or watched him on TV, so you can check that out. There's also a few Comedy Central DVDs that he is on, and of course we have the print copy of his book if you're interested. Beal on a stick.
According to Wikipedia, ventriloquism is the act of stagecraft in which a person changes his voice so that it appears that the voice is coming from somewhere else, usually a puppeteer dummy. The act of ventriloquism is ventriloquizing, and the ability to do so commonly called in English throw one's voice. The ventriloquist and the dummies have a very special place in horror films, fiction, and television. There's the 1948 British movie called Dead of Night. There's two Twilight Zone with evil dummies called The Dummy and Caesar and Me. And there's the Buffy the Vampire episode, Vampire Slayer episode called Puppet Show. Also Magic, based on a novel by William Goldman, and the movie stars Anthony Hopkins. The movie I want to talk about is Goosebumps, that was released in 2015, starring Jack Black as R.L. Stine.
Mom, are you positive that there weren't any other places looking for vice principals?
You promise you'll give it a shot?
I promise. And I looked into it legally. I can't live on my own until I'm 18.
So you're the new neighbor?
Yeah, I'm Zach, by the way.
I'm Hannah.
Hannah, get away from the window now.
I gotta go.
Hi. Hey, we're just moving in.
You see that fence?
Yes.
Stay on your side of it.
He's a big teddy bear.
Don't take it personally. He doesn't really like anyone.
Yeah. Mom, Hannah's in trouble.
Oh, who's Hannah?
She's locked in this house, and her dad's a psychopath.
Does she have a friend?
The Abominable Snowman of Pasadena? These are all Goosebumps manuscripts. Why are these books locked?
Did you unlock a book?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'll put it back where it belongs. Look, here it is.
No, don't open it!
Every monster I've ever created.
What was that?
It's the invisible boy.
Ow!
He is such a crack up.
The only way to stop them is to suck them back into the books.
You read them all, right?
Yeah.
If we know their weaknesses, we can capture them all.
We're the only ones who can do this.
Oh my god, how'd you do that?
Sore fillings. I have a ton of cavities. When I was 10, I didn't brush my teeth for a whole year.
All right, everyone, plan anything you can to barricade the doors.
We cannot let the monsters inside. I just want to break the rules.
Ah! Ow! Go, go! What are you doing? Get me out! No. Keep going. Never stop, it's
how I never stop it. Come on, scaredy cat.
Gnomes? Maybe they're friendly. Not friendly. Definitely not friendly.
Of course, Goosebump is based on the characters of R.L. Stine, and the chief villain in the Goosebump movies is an evil ventriloquist dummy called Slappy the Dummy.
Off camera, I got locked in a trunk once, and that was memorable, but for a whole other reason.
According to R.L. Stine, Slappy was inspired by the literary classic The Adventures of Pinocchio. He liked the idea of a wooden puppet coming to life, so he created Slappy. We have in our collection Night of the Living Dummies, Parts 1 and 2, the two books that introduced Slappy. Slappy was the perfect antagonist for the Goosebumps movie. We have Goosebumps in our collection, and I thought the movie was a lot of fun. So if you're bored on a slow summer night, just check out Goosebumps the movie. It's fun for young and old alike. Clem?
Yes, hello. I am talking today about the documentary I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story. Now, we're all familiar with Sesame Street and with the Muppets created by Jim Henson. So the movie I Am Big Bird delves into the man inside the bird, if you will.
Oh, hello.
My name is Carol Spinney.
Funny, I watch him all the time and I don't recognize him. But here's Carol Spinney's story.
Big Bird and Oscar are two of the most famous characters on planet Earth. Yet Carol, people don't know who he is.
How'd you get that job?
Jim Henson saw me performing.
Stand by, tape is
Jim Henson was a true genius. The world was waiting for a change, I think, and we were part of it.
But I was worried about doing good puppetry. I said, I'm not good enough to be a puppeteer.
You're a sweetheart.
No, I'm not. I'm terrible.
I had a terrible storm in my head of how unhappy I was. I was walking through headquarters, and there was a girl typing, and I said, oh my gosh, I'm in love.
I knew I would be with him for the rest of my life.
She holds it all together, and it frees him to be the free spirit that he is.
Big Bird and Oscar take us around the world.
This is the Great Wall of China!
Every time he mentioned Big Bird, the place erupted.
I mean, just look at the legacy. Carol's been doing it from day one.
The Daytime Emmy Lifetime Achievement Award.
People have asked me, don't you want to retire?
Thank you, everybody.
And I can't imagine wanting to retire.
Big Bird is the most well-known children's character in the world, and it's due to Carol.
All these decades of pure love, that, of course, is the true secret to Big Bird.
Wait, he's not real?
No, he's not real. And actually, talking about puppets, Brian Hall, who's the director of Wishing Chair Productions here at the library, has said, puppets, actors act, but puppets are. And this is why puppets sort of, I work with children a lot, and sometimes they'll be screaming and crying. You put a puppet in their face, and they are happy. However, some of them have had the opposite uncanny valley reaction.
You get a smiling face, and then you put a puppet, and they'll start crying.
Yes, but so Carol Spinney is the man inside Big Bird, and he also is the man who plays Grouch. So he plays this lovely tooth. He's Oscar the Grouch, yeah. So he plays these two very different characters.
I love Oscar the Grouch.
Exactly. Cranky, curmudgeon-y Oscar the Grouch. And beautiful, open, kind, sensitive Big Bird.
I can hear that.
Yeah, now that you say that, I totally hear it too.
So Carol Spinney started with the Muppet Workshop with Sesame Street back in the 60s. He is now in his 80s and still working as Big Bird.
Oh, I just assumed he was dead.
No, he is.
But wait, there's more.
Sorry, kids.
Talking about the subject of Big Bird dying, actually, Carol Spinney was invited by NASA in the 80s to go on the to go into space, possibly as Big Bird.
I say as Big Bird?
As Big Bird, because NASA wanted to,
get people excited about
NASA and space again.
That's so, extra large spacesuit.
The Challenger
right there.
Happened, or
then
something?
The Challenger happened.
God, I'm gonna start crying.
He did not, because the suit would not fit on the space shuttle. Oh, yeah. So they send up a teacher, The Challenger happened, and that's a very scary, poignant moment in the documentary because Carol Spinney's talking about it, and so is his beloved wife Deborah, and just their faces are silent. They just don't say anything anymore, and that's where. Because, oh my God, what could have happened? But aside from that moment, yes, Big Bird is still very much alive, and so is Carol Spinney. He does have an apprentice, because doing Big Bird, doing this puppeteering work is hard physical work. I've tried some of the puppets here. I mean, if you look at the puppeteer's forearms here, they are built.
Yeah, I bet.
Because they have to hold these wooden things up. But the Big Bird costume, Carol Spinney wears the legs as pants, basically. And then his head, he sort of looks out through a monitor inside Big Bird's belly, and he operates the head by his arm is up in the air, and he moves the eyes with a little loop using his pinky. And though this man is still in his 80s and still doing Big Bird.
Does it say how heavy the suit is? It's probably not light if it's got mechanical.
No, it's not light. It's not light at all. It's like I think they mentioned it's like wearing a fur coat inside. So
I wonder if they've managed to like lighten it over the years.
They probably have technology and everything. But it's sort of it's a wonderfully touching movie because it also shows what happens when someone finds their vocation. Someone finds their craft so totally and completely. It also details the popularity of Big Bird, how, there's all the Sesame Street characters, but Big Bird still remains sort of it.
Yeah.
It is very touching and very beautiful. It is available on DVD here at the Public Library. You can also watch it on Amazon Prime, which is what I did. You can also check out the soundtrack via Hoopla on our library. So watch Big Bird, I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story, for a touching story about finding one's vocation, about the history of Sesame Street and the Muppets. And it is a really great documentary. Now I turn it over to Mike.
Oh. Yarr.
Did you script your hems? Oh, yeah, you did.
I did. Yarr.
He's going method, too, and he's giving himself his own.
Welcome back, mateys, to Captain Mike's Pirate Corner. Long time scurvy dog.
Just to describe for our audience, Mike is covering up one eye under his glasses as an eye patch to get into character.
That's right.
You sound like Mr. Krabs.
Who was my favorite character? Mr. Krabs.
How is your depth perception now when you're reading that?
This is me good eye. I corrupt me bad eye. Long time scurvy dogs may recollect that I enjoy me time with some short tales of piratical exploits, both fictional and non.
This is only the first line in the paragraph, gang.
World's longest segment.
Aye, 'tis true. Talk like a pirate day is a year-long celebration in me pirate ship, currently moored off the briny coasts of the Harpeth River. Before I arrived in the seas of Nashville, I wrote me a pirate thesaurus in grad school. Etc. 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 Oh man.
Wait,
do you have the stamina
just
for this?
Keep going. Let's see how long it goes.
I've got two more sentences. Okay. So you may guess that I was very ecstatic to learn years ago that one of me favorite writers, Tim Powers, wrote a book on pirates called On Stranger Tides. I immediately set course for the legendary bounties of S.S. McKee's books. Aye, there was plenty of plunder that day too, boyos.
Ahem. And now, Mike is back. Captain Blackbeard Mike has left. Oh, you didn't hear the door close.
We missed you.
How's your throat feel?
Pretty good. Four more paragraphs to go. You can go back to our January 6th episode, way back, to gush about the awesomeness that is Tim Powers, but I'll just go straight to the book now. On Stranger Tides is set in the Caribbean during the Golden Age of Piracy, which roughly corresponds to about 1650 to 1730, an age where no merchant ships were safe from the pirate menace he had. The plot goes roughly as follows. A puppeteer named John Chandignac? It's French. Bay wee.
What's the peasant ramp?
Oh. Shandignac.
Yeah,
my French is terrible.
I'll go with what she said. Shandignac is on a boat to Jamaica on some family business. Along the way, he meets a woman named Elizabeth Herwood, which is a name I can pronounce, who tells him her father has given up science, or natural philosophy, as it is known, and taking up with black magic. Fun fact, I thought this was kind of neat. Isaac Newton did something similar after he wrote the Principia Mathematica, you know, with the three laws of motion and gravity and such. He devoted the rest of his life to alchemy. He parlayed his fame into becoming the master of the mint so he could become closer to gold.
Gold!
There's gold in them there hills. Yes, that's right. I'll combine two different stereotypes.
I was gonna say that, but I thought that was too far.
There's gold in them there hills. Hey. Pirates, of course, commandeer the ship. Shandignac impresses the pirates, who force him to join them and take up a much easier to pronounce name for all of us, the name of Jack Shandy. They also kidnap Elizabeth using a voodoo ritual. Yeah. Whilst becoming a cook's mate, Shandy learns the ins and outs of voodoo magic. All right. Eventually, it comes out that the pirate crew who kidnapped Shandy and Elizabeth is run by Blackbeard himself. All right. Who has allied with Elizabeth's father. That's where I learned, and I've since confirmed this, that Blackbeard would put, like, gunpowder in his beard and light it on fire to, like, freak out people that, like, you know, as he was, like, commandeering their ship. It's awesome. I want to try
that. Would work. Check.
I need to try it. Elizabeth's father will tell Blackbeard the location of the Fountain of Youth if he helps him resurrect his wife using Elizabeth's unwilling body. Zombies, wizard duels, and hot puppetry action all occur along the way as Shandy tries to thwart Blackbeard's machinations. I've heard that this is adapted in the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which we have lots of. You can check it out. I don't know or care, because the third one was so bad that my face melted off, and I've had to use a wax mask a la the Abominable Dr. Fibes to go out in public ever since.
I'm still an eye patch.
I'm still wandering out in the desert with 14 Johnny Depps, so.
I'm not sure what that means, but I like it.
Isn't that three where he like has like 14 of him? Like he's had that dream and he's out in the middle of like that white desert and he's like wanting, and then like, he meets himself and then he meets himself.
I tried to like score it out of my brain.
I've watched the second one and that was, I'm like, Yeah, that was it.
The first one was awesome.
You know, I would watch that one again,
but the other ones. Search for more money.
The search for more money.
Oh. Anyway, now while I go back to the refrigerator to cool off my waxy face, Jeremy can pull some strings.
So there were puppets in that book, right?
Yes.
The main character is a puppeteer. At one point, he becomes stranded and like has to do puppetry to like make a living.
Okay.
I skipped over that because pirates and zombies and setting beards on fire
are way more interesting
than puppets.
You lost me at Firebeard.
I heard the word puppet, so I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know if you were going on a Jeremy style
tangent
of somehow approaching the subject.
Commandeered a podcast, set my beard on fire.
I'm going to talk about maybe the most famous puppet of all.
I'm a real boy.
The character of Pinocchio first appeared in Carlo Collodi's The Adventures of Pinocchio in 1883. But modern audiences and pretty much everyone else are probably most likely familiar with the 1940 Disney film. And that character has sort of become the de facto Pinocchio for a lot of our culture. But the story of Pinocchio's transformation from a puppet to a real boy is one of the most reimagined stories in all of children's literature. So you can kind of take your pick from any number of interpretations. If you, like I was, are looking for a darker, non-Disney alternative, I suggest the graphic novel Pinocchio by the artist Winchless. Winchless is the nom de plume of artist Vincent Parinaud, who might be known to listeners as the co-director, along with Marjane Satrapi, of the film Persepolis, which was based on Satrapi's graphic memoir of the same name. That is the extent of my French. An author's note at the beginning of Winchless's Pinocchio tells us that this version of Pinocchio was freely adapted from Collodi's novel, and indeed, it really is. We see certified inventor Geppetto build a robot boy for his disinterested wife, Svetlana, and soon the boy is put to work doing chores around the house, including slathering Svetlana with sunscreen. Geppetto sees the lucrative military applications of his metal boy invention, but his hopes for sweet government contracts are dashed when he comes home to discover his wife dead and his invention gone. And that is an accident that is terrible. This sets Pinocchio off on a series of adventures, many of which can't be described on a family-friendly podcast. This book is definitely not for children. It's also mostly wordless, which sort of makes it that much more of an immersive experience. If you've never read comics without words, it really forces you to slow down.
Is it still called reading if there's no words?
I would say so. BBTL would say there is because we use a lot of wordless books because you get to tell your own story.
Sure, yeah, and you're filling in the blanks, you know. It really forces you to slow down, to spend more time with each panel and the way that all the panels play together. So it really is like you can sit down and read it all at once because it's fairly long, but it's a big book, and you really can kind of dive into it. The art is really reminiscent of old timey comic strips like Crazy Cat, but Winchless throws in several curveballs throughout with like full page watercolor and charcoal panels, as well as and there are some segments that have words and text and stuff. There's an ongoing black and white strip throughout called Jiminy Cockroach. It's really interesting to see this version knowing the Disney version, and then also knowing that there are so many other versions. So I found another version, just some art from a book by Salvador Bartolozzi. These drawings appeared in the 1920s in Spain. I'll have Brian include a link to the article in the show notes, and it's sort of neat to see them side by side to sort of see the difference in all the interpretations that are there. For now, though, you can check out Winchless's Pinocchio from the library or try his book In God We Trust, which is also a retelling of another famous book, The Bible.
Yes. They'll make a graphic novel out of anything.
Yes.
My favorite adult comic with Pinocchio in it is Fables.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, It's tickling our fancy.
Amanda?
I get to go first. I love when I get to go first.
Yeah.
So I have to admit that sometimes I get in reading ruts. You know, it happens. Kind of starts to feel like I'm reading the same book over and over. And after a while, I get so bored I can't stand it. So I go looking for a new author or a new book just to make things up a little. So the best place for me that I found to find a new book is in the audio section. So because thanks to Nashville traffic, I have plenty of time to get lost in a good story while I'm waiting for all the stupid people to get out of my way.
Go home!
Go home! Some of us are not here on vacation!
Leave tax dollars at the city limits!
Just send money! So anyway, I digress. Recently, I stumbled across an audio download on Overdrive called Kitchens of the Great Midwest. It's by J. Ryan Stradahl. Now, I think I had actually tried to check it out earlier, but someone else had already checked it out before me, so I had to wait my turn.
Wait.
Sharing is fun. But this time it was available, so I checked the thing out. I'd never heard of Stradahl before, but as you know, I like to read about food, so it was a good risk. Plus, I am from the Midwest, so these are my people. This is where I come from.
Corn-fed.
That's right. Almost. The book is actually set... It's set in Minnesota, Iowa. Yeah. So they were more like my Scandinavian cousins than my closer German relatives. Don't you know? So the story follows the Thorvald family and its circle of friends. In the middle is Eva Thorvald, who weaves in and out of the story, first as a young girl who loves food like her father, then as a budding cook with a pop-up diner, and finally we see her as a much-touted chef whose dinner is the hardest and most expensive reservation to get in the world. We're talking like $5,000 for six courses. The novel is composed of different vignettes, and Eva is not always the focus, but she is always present in some fashion. And I didn't really get that as I was reading it. Kind of, I thought the author was just writing about wholly separate characters, but kind of now that I have the whole picture, I realize how everything was connected. It was subtle, but it was cool. Now the book ends with an epic dinner party that I won't spoil here. My favorite part was when she was little, Eva got picked on at school, and she was growing hydroponic habanero chili peppers. Yeah, you thought it was going to go a different direction. So, but she made like this chili oil out of it, and when the guys like picked on her, she spit it in their face and like burned their eyes out because it's like stronger than mace. So
jalapeno on a stick.
On a stick.
When you said she likes food like her father, I was like, she likes food like her father.
Her father was a chef.
Yeah, I know. No, but I mean,
father.
I mean, I know.
I'm sorry, I didn't read the
comma. No. You did. You did. But I was.
She ate her father.
I was eat shoots and leaves again.
So this book, I will admit, this book took a little bit to get into, probably because it was a new author for me. But once I did, I really enjoyed it. I found myself thinking about it after I stopped listening. And even though I wanted to see how it turned out, I was kind of sad when it's over. Now, the library only has this on audio download from Overdrive. But if you've got a road trip coming up, I recommend this one, especially if you are driving through or to the Great Midwest.
You also unintentionally made a pun that Mike probably would have loved because you said it ends with an epic dinner party, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
Oh.
Subtle pun.
I wasn't paying attention. I should have.
Too much pirate in your head at the moment.
Hardy.
Bill?
Tickling My Fancy is a DVD we have in our collection called The Keeping Room. I'm going to use Internet Movie Database description. Left without men in the dying days of the American Civil War, three Southern women, two sisters, and one African-American slave must fight to defend their home and themselves from two rogue soldiers who have broken off from the fast-paced approaching Union Army.
I remember Daddy telling a story about a girl and a sister. A girl was going to be killed by a gang. What if all the men killed all the other men? What if it's the end of the world and we're the last ones left?
You shouldn't be here. Turn around and get yourself out of here.
Someplace you gotta be.
It's our home. We don't have to fight.
We got men here.
Girl! You got 10 to come out!
You bar this door behind me. If a man comes through, no matter what, you shoot.
What?
The crueler it is, sooner it will be over.
Why you come like you want a war?
Two!
Don't know how to stop.
Nine!
A whole army.
We can hold him.
I've been waiting for you.
I've been looking for you.
I can't recommend this movie highly enough. I kept waiting for this movie to come to the theaters. It never did. Tragic. It's a rare Civil War movie told from a woman's perspective. It was written by Julia Hart, her first screenplay, and directed by Daniel Barber, who directed the great, sadly neglected, Harry Brown, and the short The Tonto Rooman. So The Keeping Room is a great movie, and we have it in our collection. I highly, highly recommend you watch it.
Who's in that? Because I remember hearing about that.
Hailee Steinfeld, you know, from,
From True Grit.
True Grit. Yeah. And the other actress, I can't think of my name, but Sam Worthington's one of the union guys from Avatar.
I remember hearing about that.
So I highly recommend it.
So this is a recent movie?
Recent.
I thought it was an old movie.
I was going, oh, I want this to come to the theater, and it never did. Clem Marie, what's tickling your fancy?
Yes, so tickling my fancy this week, we are talking about the International Puppet Festival. So what's tickling my fancy this week is the Bringing Books to Life Craft Room. Every puppet festival, Bringing Books to Life, my program, is tasked with creating a craft so that people, both children and adults, can come in and create their own puppets. This year, we are doing shadow puppets. And you will also get the opportunity to try them out yourself in a room with the lights off on a tent and everything to do shadow puppets. You can make shadow puppets from stencils. You can freehand them. You can also do them from pre-cut shapes. We have the craft available for the tiniest children to the biggest adults. So come see us. We will be in the program room directly across from the children's theater of the second floor of the main library. So you can come on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and make your own shadow puppet. Nice. Mike, what's tickling your fancy?
Today, I thought I'd like to recommend The Core of the Sun.
I thought you were totally going to go into pirate voice.
I was waiting. I was waiting for it.
He's covering
today,
up his eye.
No.
He's covering up his eye again, y'all.
With the fake eye patch. I like it.
I'm not going to get into character.
It really is a good like Mr. Krabs.
The Core of the Sun by Johanna Sinisalo. It's about an alternate present Finland where, in the interest of public health, all women are separated into two groups. Eloy, who are beautiful but not especially intelligent blondes, who are just there as breeding stock, basically, and Morlocks, who are smart but sterilized at an early age and are socially ostracized. You know, those names are basically taken from the Time Machine.
Yes.
H.G. Wells. The main character is Vanna, who looks like an Eloy but is secretly a Morlock. Ooh. The strain of her double life threatens to overwhelm her until she tries a dose of illegal chili peppers.
Oh, chili peppers again!
Yes.
Wow.
We've got a theme going.
I know.
Yeah, a spicy, delicious theme.
You got this book with your chili peppers and that book you talked about with the tomatoes or whatever.
It was
some like urban fantasy book where the vampires are.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Kim Harrison series with the evil tomatoes.
Like, books and vegetables.
And jalapeno on a steak.
Yeah, jalapeno on a steak.
I kill you.
It's as if fantasy writers don't want to eat healthy foods or something.
Well, you know, they need to talk about something that's totally hot, you know. And that throws a blanket on everything. Yeah, apparently the Finnish government recently like declared chili peppers illegal. Everything's about for health reasons, so like red meat is illegal and all kind of stuff.
Prostitution is legal there.
They call it a eusistocracy. Well, not in this book, I don't know. Okay. The extreme heat produces a weird kind of high that Vanna begins to crave increasingly as time wears on. Vanna and her boyfriend soon get caught up in the chili pepper underground.
You know, like you do.
Gotta get those chili peppers.
I would tell you guys how she figures out what peppers are real, but I cannot say it on a family-friendly podcast. It was quite surprising. one thing that I found particularly amusing is that between chapters there are advertisements and excerpts from books from this world that fill you in on the history and slang. For instance, the science, quote-unquote, behind the creepy Stepford Wife Society is based on an actual Russian scientist's work in eugenics and conditioning in the early part of the 20th century. The Core of the Sun is an example of Finnish weird, a new kind of fantasy imported from Finland that NPR says is becoming popular.
They just call it weird
No.
Yeah, it's like Canadian bacon. They just call it weird
they call it
ham.
They just call it ham or bacon.
No, I think I asked my mom. I was like, Mom, do French people call French toast as toast? She's like, Mike, don't ask questions about that. fun fact, as far as I could tell, and I'm sure Brian can correct me, all he likes, all the Finnish weird authors that I've seen are women. So, I mean, I think it's kind of neat. Personally, I didn't find it super weird. I mean, trust me, guys, after you read Bizarro Fiction, this is just, you know, or Surreal Fiction, you know, pish posh. But I had a super fun time, and I'm eager to try out more of the genre.
That book sounds super cool, that dystopian, and then all of a sudden, you know, people are getting high on chili peppers.
Oh, yeah. Chili, I like it.
She's like downing like a jar of like jalapenos, like juice and all at one point to catch the high, you know, to get back on the dragon. Dear dog, what's been your fancy, bro?
Tickling My Fancy is the June 6th episode of the WTF podcast, which features George C. Wolfe. He's a playwright and director, best known for Jelly's Last Jam, Angels in America, Millennium Approaches, and Bring In Da Noise, Bring In Da Funk. He also happens to be from my hometown of Frankfort, Kentucky. We went to the same high school, but that really was not a part of the show. They talk about Wolfe's new production, Shuffle Along, or the making of the musical sensation of 1921 and all that followed, and theater in general. And it's the kind of thing that I listened to it because it was, hey, he was a big figure when I was in high school, and people in the drama club, of which I was a member, were like, he went to this school and he's a big deal. And I thought, okay. So I listened to it, and it was really exciting. It was a really interesting, exciting conversation. And they talked about my town very briefly, but it was a very interesting snapshot of a time that I had, because he was there before I was born. But it was a very exciting show, and it made me want to go to the theater.
What
happened to the theater?
And read some literature.
Acting. You could put a monocle on.
Genius, thank you.
Corrections! Who has corrections? I do.
I don't.
Okay, I will go, because I have two from Brian. Brian said that in the June 1st episode, the sample from John Williams' Jaws score was not the recording used in the movie, but a version by the Boston Pops Orchestra. You can find the recording you heard on Freegal. The library does have the actual Jaws score, though, and there's a link to it in the show notes. Also, during the Stephen King episode, the sample at the beginning was from an American Express ad from 1984, and the clip at the end was a 2013 interview on the CBC when he was promoting Dr. Sleep, the sequel to The Shining. Last week during Tickle My Fancy, I said that comic book writer Louise Simonson was known to wheezy among her friends, which sounds like some sort of drug reference. But what I meant to say was she's known as Wheezy to her friends.
Oh, it's the 10th victim, not the 7th. I was sipping tea in my library when I looked over and saw that I got the wrong book title. Oh, well, so nice.
What is that in reference to?
Robert Sheckley wrote a novel about 60 years ago that was very similar to The Hunger Games, but, you know, involved a dude. 2017 is the year that The Running Man is set, so, you know, I remember seeing a meme last year where it was like, forget Back to the Future. 2017 is Running Man year, and I was like, yeah! Me and Meme Writer can get together. And I meant to say that the roofs, well, ancient tenants were slanted at an angle. You know, that's what I get for improvising. It's not involves some sort of vegetables or peasants. And for books about peasants, tenants, and things that are slanted at angles, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Bean.
Oh, yeah. Subscribe to the podcast. Why don't you on the RSS, Stitcher, or
iTunes.
LinkedIn. iTunes. LinkedIn.
That's what I use.
Yes.
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. He might as well be dead. Yeah. Fresh from 30 Rock.
Resume.
We're not on LinkedIn, Stitcher, iTunes, RSS feed.
We're not dead.
So next week we are
Pride Fest.
Pride.
Nashville Pride.
Pride Fest.
Right.
Oh yes, Christian groups do love to use puppets in ministry. I once saw a whole puppet thing called "Are You Ready for the Rapture?" set to the tune of Monday Night Football. Are you ready for the rapture?
Do you want to die?
I will have to go into it a little. They wanted to perform it. Okay, because we'll keep. I'll tell the story later.
We got to talk about gospel mime.
Have you seen The Leftovers?
Brian's ready.
Barf.
Gotta get my challah.
Are you talking about challah the bread or?
No.
Challah the pino.
I was like, jalapeno. You know how people call drugs like things like Mary Jane or whatever? Okay. So, what would you call?
Yo, man, you got some pino?
My favorite fake name for a drug. I don't know if I can mention the drug name here, but because we are a family friendly podcast,
we used to be.
My favorite fake name is Thunder Lettuce for marijuana.
Wow.
I would totally smoke. I've never heard of that.
Wow.
The Thunder Lettuce.
I gotta.
More exciting than weed.
Yeah, no kidding.
Weed. I want to smoke all the Thunder Lettuce.
Yeah. Thunder Lettuce. Thunder. That's.
It's like Thundercats, but
what?
Thunder Lettuce.
But healthier.
Cats,
man. Thunder Lettuce. Oh! Cool.
Tickling my fancy this week. Thunder Lettuce. Thunder Kale. I like Thunder Kale.
Thunder Kale is better. Yeah. It's a superfood.
I like spinach. Whoa!
Was that you doing Joey Gladstone doing Popeye?
Yes. Cut it off. Is that puppet mouth of world? All right. Woo!
Full house. Hey.
I'll get a straight flush. Let's go.
Oh, God.
Wait, what did you say?
I've got a straight flush. Oh. Let's go. See, full house.
Oh, I see.
Oh.
It doesn't work when you have to explain it.
Yeah.
Loses something.